96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
This morning, and welcome back to Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk, all day. It is Tuesday, the 29th of March, 2022, and you are on the clock with Erin Green. I want to welcome you all to the 17th month of winter. This cold front will not go away, but I say welcome to all of the people who love it. I know you all love it. Enjoy it, enjoy it, enjoy it, for soon we shall all die, and the summer heat is going to fall upon us. Listen, people, get ready for it. Get ready for the summer heat, right? First of all, prepare yourself psychologically and emotionally, right? You only have one fan in your house? Prepare to cry every other night because you got to share the fan, right? Prepare to jam up on the bed because you're trying to share the fan. But prepare. Don't let these things get between us. You see, this is what the old people was talking about. I used to think they was just old and miserable, right? And they'd say, oh, these things ain't real. You ain't focus on the Lord, focus on your glory, right? But what they're saying is, listen, you construct your identity around things that are not real, that are fallible, that you cannot control, then you're going to have a hard time with life when you face situations where you cannot control or you cannot have access to those things you use to construct your identity, right? So if you were like me, you're a little bougie, you grow up going to QC, electricity all your, you know, AC in your bedroom all your life, and then the summer of 2013 hit and BPL say, look here, I don't care, but BPL didn't exist then. BEC say, look here, I don't care about your feelings or your wallet. Nobody gets electricity. Nobody gets electricity. Right? You gotta be prepared for that. And so my people, prepare for the summer heat. And I'm sort of making fun, but the truth is, we're gonna have to make a lot of sacrifices this summer to be able to sustain the most important things in our lives. And we're going to have these conversations with our children so they can understand the decisions that we're making and why they're important in the present and in the future. And this is very, very important, you know. Don't treat your children like they're coincidental or they're not a part of this thing you call your household, right, or your life. Engage them. Tell them why you have to sacrifice. Ask them what are the things that you can easily give up and what are the things that are going to take a little more effort for them to give up so that y'all could have the basic things, right? And possibly so you could support other family members and community members also just having access to the basics. Here's another thing. Let's not beat up on people for wanting things, right? We decided we're going to make fun of people and call people tingsy. Guess what? Humans are tingsy. That's a part of our condition. We're not going to make fun of people for not having things, and we're not going to make fun of them for wanting things. That is a part of our human condition. All I got to say is, though, be prepared, be prepared, be prepared, not just physically, but also psychologically and emotionally, and help your children prepare themselves for what may be hard times for many. Now, on the physical preparation front, I got a good tip for you. Look here, first of all, you need a bucket. And if you live with your parents, you need three buckets. However many parents you have, you need extra buckets. Then you're going to need some Ziploc bag, and you're going to need to rent out freezer space. This is very important. Fill your Ziploc bag with water. Freeze it up. At the heat of the height of the day, or when you can least tolerate the heat, fill that bucket with some water. Put that Ziploc bag of ice in there and create yourself a mini spa at home. Just put your feet in there and let them cool out. You'll be surprised what type of relief that will bring to you on a hot day. But dare children, don't be too good at it. If you're too good at it, your parents can think that's a job, like you train to make sure their feet are cool all the time. So don't be too good at it. But it's a simple, quick trick, right, to keep cool in the summer. Another quick thing is if you get face cloths, we call them washcloths or face cloths to spare, and you got a Ziploc bag or a little grocery bag, right? Soak it in water. Squeeze out some of the water. You don't want too much water in it. Put it in the Ziploc bag and freeze it. Sometimes when you're overheating, just taking that cool bag, putting that on your neck, or taking that frozen towel out and putting it on your neck until it defrosts and it thaws out. That could cool you right down. Children, this is very important. When you see your parents running hot on you for no reason at all, like they mad at the sun, but they know they can't fight the sun, just get them a towel, help them cool down. That little moment could shift the energy in your house entirely. Here's another little money-saving tip. It's tamarind season. And you know how I know it's tamarind season? Because limes cost $7 a pair. Two limes for $7, it can't work out. Have no fear, though. I find some tamarind in Johnson Road is so sour you could season your fish with them. And that's just what I did. I could be honest with you. I went to the local farmer's market. I found me a nice tamarind pepper spread from my favorite vendor, SG Ranch. And I marinated my fishes in some tamarind pepper spread with a little bit of lime, just half a lime, and that spread. And trust me, it was really, really nice. You got that. The tamarind did to the fish what the lime does to the fish. Try it out. Don't stress out. Try something new. Welcome to On the Clock. I got a quick text here. Great show as usual. Bahamians pass Tingsy. It's levels to this. That's why people out there doing something strange for peace of change. Listen, talk to your children about it. For real, talk to your children about it. Prepare them for the world that they're going to have to navigate on their own soon. And show them that, yes, everybody wants things. And, yes, not everybody could afford the things that they want. It's about balance. It's about work, commitment to, you know, your goal. But most importantly, do not feel badly about yourself because you can't afford things. Don't think lesser of yourself. We remember the people that focus on the important things first, right? Those are the people we give the praise to. And that's a responsible thing to do. You could be all right. Good morning to my guest co-host, Mr. Mark Palmer. How are you?
Morning. Everything cool? Yeah.
Yeah, good. I know everything is cool. It was like 65 degrees outside my bedroom door.
My cats ran back in when I let them out this morning. Boom. Too cold.
Yeah. Bahamian pod cat. Real thing. And to my guest this morning, Miss Marion Bethel, good morning.
Good morning, Erin and Mark. I'm so pleased to be here. I've been wanting to do this for a long time, and the time is now.
All right. Now, Marion, you're going to have to speak directly into the mic. You could pull it towards you a bit more. Right, there you
okay,
go.
Okay, so now, am I loud enough now?
I think so.
Yes, perfect. Okay,
yeah, I
great.
Think so. So I've been trying to get Miss Bethel on the show for a whole year now, and I can say that Miss Bethel is one of the hardest working women in the Bahamas. She have a plethora of jobs. They say, when you say they got a plethora of jobs, that means they got plenty, plenty work. Miss Bethel is not only a wife and mother, she's also a creative writer and poet, a documentarian, a lawyer, a women's rights advocate, a CEDAW committee member. And you sit on, over time, you've sat on a number of panels, boards, worked with organizations. You are perhaps what we're going to call the new Renaissance woman. But I don't think my introduction could do you justice. So I have to ask the traditional Bahamian question, who you is and where you from?
Yeah, So I write from the Bahamas right here. Grew up in Nassau, right up on the top of Nassau Street Hill. Mm-hmm. My parents own the funeral home there. So I grew up there in this community and was nurtured by the Chippingham community, the Bainetown community, the Grantstown community, and all of the people in that community have helped me to be who I am and where I am today. So I'm really grateful for having grown up in a community that nurtured me. In particular, as I got older, I realized that the women of the women's suffrage movement were people that nurtured me every day as I walked to school, as I went to church. Mm-hmm. And so that is who I am, very much a part of the Bahamian community and immersed in it and just pulling for us to be the best place that we can be in terms of human rights and human development.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Sometimes I want to say fortunate, sometimes I want to say unfortunate, right? Like, I am of the generation, maybe not the first, but the second generation that grew up in the suburbs, right? If there's ever such a thing on an island as 21/7. But in that wave of people whose parents would have gone off to educate themselves, to arm themselves with the tools necessary to grow the country. Mm-hmm. And a part of that national vision, I think, was a sense of land ownership, mm-hmm. and ownership and national pride. And so young Bahamians were encouraged not to leave their homestead and create a vacuum to be filled by whatever, which is in some instances is what's happened, but they were encouraged to go out and create new homesteads and create new communities and create new ways of being Bahamian. And so I didn't get to enjoy the Fort Hill. Mm-hmm. I didn't get to run up and down. In fact, I'm going to write a book. In fact, no, it's not going to be a book. It's going to be an album, a musical album. It's going to be a diss track, a collection of diss tracks, Mark, called From the Fort Hill to Collins Wall, The Building of a Nation, mm-hmm. Without Us Young People. I think it's going to be a hit. But you guys have this vibrant history that you, when you delve into it, you really understand how the Bahamas has become what it is, where resources have gone. And you know, this is not a diss track. It's very interesting. From Fort Hill to Collins Wall.
Yeah.
But my Grammy mm-hmm. wouldn't let me off the side porch, right?
Mm-hmm. I remember your grandmother very well, Harry.
Yes, she
would have been friends of my mom.
Right.
Yes.
But I was fortunate enough to come up in a space of women's rights advocates and volunteers that created a different type of community mm-hmm. where working mothers, all their children is with you, and you just hear, and there's always a space for your children, because they gotta be with you. What else gonna happen? Mm-hmm. I was fortunate as a young woman and as a young advocate to grow up in a space with a Marion Bethel, with a Audrey DeVoe, who's less an advocate and more an activist, with Margot Blackwell, even mm-hmm. with Helen Clinaris. Yeah. It was a different type of community space. That I'm hoping that the advocacy world can still continue to sort of perpetuate mm-hmm. and promulgate. Mm-hmm. But we can write that diss track from the Fort Hill to Collins Wall.
There you go.
The building of a nation and what they wouldn't tell us. But you all had a good time growing up. So Marion, you
yes.
are an award-winning short story writer and poet. You won the James Michener Fellowship in 1991 and the Casa de the Casa de las Americas Prize for a volume of poetry called Guanahani, My Love, which was published in 1995. And your second poetry collection is Bougainvillea Ring Play, which was published in 2009. So I have this question to ask you. How you get to be making documentaries when you're supposed to be writing poetry and love songs and stories? How do you make that transition to making womanish ways, freedom, human rights, and democracy?
Right. Well, Erin, you know, when I came home in 1986, I was really struck from law school. I was really struck by the fact that women's history was just not anywhere on the horizon in my life or in the public narrative. and very struck by the fact that the historical accounts were about male leadership and what men did from, let's say, 1942 up to now to create the modern Bahamas. And so I began to look at some research, and I came across two articles, one by Kim Outen Stubbs mm-hmm. and one by Ruth Bo Darvill about the women's suffrage movement in the Bahamas. Well, I was completely blown away. Mm-hmm. That shifted my internal landscape fundamentally when I read these two articles, because I was well versed in the suffrage movement, let's say, of England or even the mm-hmm. United States of America. You know, I knew mm-hmm. more about that. And then when I read these two articles, I couldn't comprehend how I did not know this earlier. And so I made it a point from 1986 up until the time that the documentary was actually made, which took like 12 years, quite frankly, to do the research, et cetera, to really bring this to the attention of the Bahamian public. I thought it was critical. I thought that this movement should not be a footnote to our history as it was seen as sort of quixotic and sort of, you know, just an aberration. It was not a damned aberration. This was serious stuff in post-World War II to create this Bahamas. These women felt so deeply about what they were experienced as women, what they were experienced as black women in this country in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, colonization, racial segregation, racism, all of this came to bear during this period, lack of labor rights. Mm-hmm. And these women saw the civil rights and political rights, particularly the right to vote and the right to stand for election as a woman, a portal to the larger questions of social justice, yeah. human rights, and other civil and political rights. So they fought for this. I mean, hand, tooth, and nail, these women. And they had a strategy. They had documents that were based in terms of their philosophy mm-hmm. and how they wanted to do what they did. So we've lost track, in my view, of the strategies and demonstrations that these women did to bring us to where we are. And these can be prototypes and legacies for us to build on. But there's a disjuncture because we do not know and don't appreciate what went on.
Absolutely.
So where did we find this film? Because I wasn't aware of it. And I think, you know, this is something that young people should be watching in their schools, you know, as part of the history. It sounds amazing. So where do we get to see it? Is it on Netflix?
So, Mark, I'm gonna a complimentary copy is coming to you post-haste. So it's been available in Logos. It's been available in the UB bookstore. I'm not sure it's there now, simply because it's a DVD, and DVDs are no longer really, de rigueur. And so, So it is shown.
This could be something on a Facebook page, you know, like a video that you can click on and just. How long is it?
It's about 70 minutes.
70 minutes. Right. Yeah, that's still.
Absolutely. Good. But you got to do something, Marion. Yeah. We have to create a mechanism, right? So when I bootleg it, I can send money back to you, right? Like when I send it up in the park and I just can play it, I can send a tribute, I could send a compensatory payment back to you so that we can spread it. I tell you why, and I really tout this, there's a privilege in knowing who you are, and so we walk around this place, and I know people walk around here and see me and look at Erin Green and say, what a bigoty woman, right? What a, you know, like space-consuming woman. Mm-hmm. I know... I could see it in people's eyes, and just sometimes your presence will make them raise discomfort, right? Mm-hmm. Let me tell you all something. It's a privilege to know who you are and where you come from. I didn't know any. You said it took you 12 years to do that research.
That's right.
We didn't learn that stuff even at QC, and if we did, I don't. It wasn't profound or poignant enough. Presented in a way that I would remember it.
Right.
But I tell you I walk this place like I know that. I walk this place like I know this history. Yes. Those are my people, and there's a privilege to that, and we need to be able to, young people need access to that, those experiences.
Absolutely. Right. So
I was going to ask you about the sacrifice mm-hmm. that the women made, because we're familiar with the sacrifice in the UK. You know, they lost their children, their marriages. All sorts of pressure were put on them, particularly when it became economic, when they started smashing windows in the main problem. That's when they took notice, because then it cost people money.
Right.
But there were tremendous sacrifices, split families. Did the same thing happen here?
Absolutely. Oh, wow. I mean, I can pinpoint two right just off the top. Eugenia Lockhart, who was one of the principal leaders of the women's suffrage movement, she lost her sewing contracts. She was a seamstress and did that kind of work for the government, etc., and for local people, for the citizens. And she lost several of her seamstress contracts because of the work that she was doing, all right? Doris Johnson, it was then the United Bahamian Party that was the minority government, she lost a scholarship to go away to school because of her work in the suffrage movement and the PLP movement too, all right? So yes, there was tremendous sacrifice by these women. I mean, the kind of petitions that they brought to Parliament, which had 3,000 voters, three potential voters that signed the petitions. Wow. These came from Andros, they came from Abaco, they came from far-flung, so to speak, family islands, which would have been difficult to access at that time, much less now. And they did this work. So the sacrifices in terms of their families, and as Aaron was saying, these women took their children with them, you know, to make sure that the children were well taken care of while they were doing what they were doing. Mm-hmm. But the sacrifices go on. Those are two that are documented. Yes.
So I want to read a blurb I found when doing a little research on the documentary. And then I want to ask you the question. I can ask you the question and read the blurb. So there's a rumor story that floats around, and I want you to, if you can, to verify whether it's true or not, that women during the suffrage movement, when the PLP was attempting to gain the government, that women that worked as housekeepers, women that worked in homes of wealthy, particularly white Bahamians, I think, that they would go to work in their uniform, but they would wear their PLP shirts underneath their uniform, right, as a demonstration, as a sort of silent protest. Is that true?
Well, yes. I mean, there is some truth to that, and this is something that happened during the slave period too, where black people were domestic workers in slavers' homes and had to play double roles in terms of who they were and how they then tried to create other alternative ways of being and living and resistance. Mm-hmm. So moving on from that's been part of our cultural experience. So yes, I mean during the 40s, 50s, and 60s, and earlier than that. Black people, domestic workers, played this very double role where they, went to homes and did what they had to do, but in their other lives, in lodges and churches, they had very different experiences. So yes, I mean that's commonplace.
there's this common, I don't want to call it a trope, but there's this common thing that the young people say. They like to say, if I were alive back then, I wouldn't take what my grandparents took, right? Like, they couldn't do that to me. But I don't think, because of our lack of access to the history, the way that it was collected, the way that it was documented and stored, sometimes we don't see the savviness of their protests and their presence in their own oppression, right? We don't see the strategies. And so, we were making, people generally were making fun, not everybody, of Candy Gibson's demonstration, her attempt to gain the attention of the government, and it worked. Mm-hmm. It worked. She got a seat at the table.
Yes.
And now, it's up to us to support her in leveraging that for the best benefit of her and the community, right? Mm-hmm. But that was a savvy form of engagement.
Yes.
And let's not discount the savviness, the commitment to freedom of our ancestors, of our forebears. Right. Just, people say this, what I would have done, and think, man, look here, we got big mouth, but y'all wouldn't even tell the people stop running the stop sign, Anyway,
I think Candy Gibson needs to be supported in the work that she's doing. I think it's strategic. It's it captures the interest of the community, and I think whether it's dramatic or not, which is very important, I think let's do it, So I support the work that she's doing and the way she's doing it.
I think it's very brave to say these things in hindsight, I would have done this, I would have done that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then why aren't they doing it now?
Yeah.
Because we have similar issues, right? Maybe they weren't as you know, pressing, but many people won't step up for the loss of those government contracts or whatever the sacrifice, you know, it's easy. What do they say about talk is cheap, right?
Yeah, talk is cheap.
Yeah, right, and in some instances, the fear of disadvantaging your dependents, right, through sound moral action. So let me read the blurb, then we're going to get to a call, and then we're going to transition into another subject. So this is the blurb that I found. I just thought it was wonderful. And even after doing research on the documentary for prior shows, this is the first time I found this. And it said, this documentary is dedicated to the heroic struggle of Kate Moss and Mary Prince, two enslaved women who fought for their freedom in the 1820s in the Bahamas, and to the women of the women's suffrage movement who continued with the advocacy for freedom and social justice. In their singular womanish ways, these women advanced and expanded the cause of democracy in the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. And I would say, while the film focuses on five women leading the movement, we know that there were tons of women involved in that. And I'd like to think of my Grammy pinching my parents, you know, and reminding them that you got to be disciplined for the movement, you know, growing a nation, and all of the women who are involved in it, and men as well.
Yes, absolutely. Erin, my heart is full as you read that, because when I was doing the work and wanting to make the documentary, I realized that the work of the women in the women's suffrage movement post-World War II was anchored by the enslaved women of the 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th century. And so I wanted to actually start the documentary or at least do something about that period, but it would have been too complicated and involved.
Yeah.
And so what I did was I just dedicated the work to those two women, and those two enslaved women in particular, because those are the two women whose stories were brought to us. I mean, there's so many enslaved women whose identities we do not know, all right? And we may know our great-great-grandparents' names, but throughout history, enslaved women and men did not have full names, you know? And so these two women, Kate Moss and Mary Prince, their stories came to the attention of the abolition of the slave societies in England. And so there's a biography on Mary Prince, and then Kate Moss, her story was very important because in Acklands, she was beaten to death by her enslavers, by the masters. And so her story came to the public forefront because of that.
Yeah.
And so I really wanted to pay tribute to all of the enslaved women who set us on the course of emancipation and freedom. And it's still an unfinished project to this day. And so the women of the suffrage movement took it to another level. And we, in this contemporary period, have a lot of work to do to take it to the next qualitative level.
Maybe you could update the documentary and bring all the current players into it. I think that would be a great idea.
So, Mark, I would love to do that. The cost of it is one item.
How much sea grape you need?
So give it to me, Erin, now. You know. So to make that documentary, I had to solicit from public and private persons, and that took a lot of time, creative time that I could have spent in other ways. But it is not easy to get the funding that one needs to do the kinds of work that is really important. So yes, number two, I would love to, if you want to help with just bringing some funds together, I'm on
Absolutely.
It.
And listen, producer, we're going to get to that call. What a conundrum, because here we have two leading academics, activist advocates with Marion Bethel and Ian Strawn, right? And there's this great tension in the community where their energies should be placed. What is the work that they should focus on? It's nation building. Everybody's saying nation building, right? Is it going to be making movies, documentaries? Is it going to be teaching here? And anybody asks, well, what y'all want to do? Like, what do y'all want to do with your life? What is it that drives you? Like, after you learn, look at your beautiful children face and say, look here, if y'all don't get from around me with your peasy head, once you've done that for the day, what is it that drives you? And y'all ain't gonna never get a chance for that, because we just gonna keep hounding you and pouring this collective public desire upon you. And I hope you're all ready for that. Producer, let's go to the caller. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock. Good morning, caller. You still there? I am sorry, caller. Let's go to that second caller, producer. Good morning, caller.
Hello.
Hey, good morning, Sparky. How you doing?
Good morning, right there. I was waiting for a while, but anyway, you got to do what you got to do. But you know, Ms. Glenn, good morning to you and your guests. Sometimes I try my best to shoot some little history about to you that you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time, you cut me before I even finish. But I just want to say I'd like to thank all the women before my era. Because me growing up as a youngster, remember, even the women, most of the women when I went to school from junior school to primary school, junior school, senior school, even all the way up to the government high, most of the teachers were women.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the male teachers, they either taught you woodwork or P.E., or something along those lines. Maybe sometimes somebody comes in with chemistry and maybe history. But all the other subjects were basically always taught by women. My mother was a teacher at Sacred Heart School. My mother also had two jobs. She'd go to Sacred Heart School in the day to teach and then go to Malcolm Gas Station and work, and also go to the hospital at night as a switchboard operator. These women were never honored, no time in life. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you something. Let me tell you something, Miss Green, before I go. Please let me give me the time. Mm-hmm. My mother went to A.B. Malcolm, who loved Junkanoo, on Bay Street near the gas station. My mother went to him and asked him for the first sponsorship for Gus Cooper and the Valley Boys back in December 1958.
Mm-hmm.
To this day, Miss Green, Gwendolyn Mercedes Joy Menspender Fountain, my mother, has never been honored. I have been honored by Joker Lewis and the Valley Boys at Government House. And my mother, who started the Valley Boys in 1958, has never been honored. It's not about me. It's about people honoring the people who deserve to be honored. The women who allowed their young men to go out to juggle practice, when police used to come down in cars in the valley to arrest people for practicing juggle because they thought it was a nuisance. Juggle is the biggest cultural event today in the Commonwealth, in the Caribbean.
Yes, you're right,
Sparky.
These
people who started it and honored it were never honored.
All right, thank you, Sparky. I appreciate your petition, particularly with the audience this morning. And it's a story that needs to be told. But quite frankly, you know, God bless the dead, your mother did not rush with the greatest scrap group in the history of Junkanoo white people or the whole world, the Spirit, which is the group that I'm a part of, Sparky. But you're right. We need to find a way, a mechanism to honor these people. But before that, we have to shift the culture so that people understand who deserves honor and why they deserve honor. What acts, right? Like where we're located in the community and that what we do is purposeful. The community can't exist without us in it, right? That's very important. And that's why our communities are falling apart, because we forget that the honor is with the ordinary man that gets up and does the ordinary thing every day, because that's their thing to do, you know? Anyway, don't be mad at me, Sparky. Don't be mad at me at all. And thank you for that contribution again. Producer, let's go to a break. And when we come back from the break, we're going to have an even more exciting discussion about CEDAW and this pesky issue of marital rape. Mm-hmm. Stay tuned to Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. We'll be right back.
Threw mommy clothes on the dog. I started crying, oh Lord, mommy knocked daddy with a piece of boy. Please, mom and daddy, don't fight no more.
Fidelity, we're good for you. We know how important collecting your money can be to the success of your business. Start your relationship with Fidelity today so that we can show you the many options available to you with our merchant services. From click and pay options online to merchant terminals and e-commerce options, we're here to help your business succeed. For more details, speak to one of our business development officers at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit our website at fidelitygroup.com or visit any of our branches.
One thing there is no debate about is that BTC has the best rates. Now, the best rates just got better because you pay half the price of the other guys with your BTC home internet and mobile services combined. Switching to BTC is a no-brainer because I pay less with BTC and get super fast internet with speeds up to 600 megs. The other guys, their internet only go up to 105 megs.
Get all the internet you want at half the price when you bundle your home internet and mobile. Visit a BTC store to make the switch today. Conditions apply.
Like what you're hearing on the show? Want to support the conversation? Sponsor On the Clock today. Call Janet Lees at 302-2304. That's 302-2304. Be the solution. Sponsor On the Clock of Erin Green, where she dissects, we discuss, and you decide.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Good morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. Listen, you're on the clock with Erin Green. I've got my guest co-host, Mr. Mark Palmer, in studio with me, and my guest today, Ms. Marion Bethel. We were just talking about womanish ways, freedom, human rights, and democracy, the women's suffrage movement in the Bahamas from 1948 to 1962, which is a documentary about just that, the women's suffrage movement in the Bahamas. And we talked too long about that, people. We talked too long about that because I had a hot and controversial... It's not really hot and controversial, you know. I think I had something we need to talk about. And I think it's important to have a conversation with Ms. Bethel, who's been one of the leading advocates on this subject for a very long time. Recently, I've been told that since I am married, what I do in talking about marital rape, and I just want to say, listen, first of all, perhaps I am an expert on the subject, understanding that the only way to avoid it is to not get married. But, so, Marion, you are a member of the CEDAW committee, right? The Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women. Now, CEDAW is the only international human rights treaty that specifically focuses on the rights of women. Is this true?
That is true. The only one. There are 10 other human rights treaties, and they all focus on different aspects of human rights.
Right.
And CEDAW is the only one that focuses on the Bill of Human Rights for women and girls.
Right. And I imagine that's because they felt that particular, like special... more energy needed to be focused on this particular issue.
Absolutely. Coming out of the 60s and 70s women's movements and the early suffrage for women in the early 1900s, the international community felt very strongly that there ought to be a Bill of Human Rights for women, simply because the current human rights were basically male-focused. And so the international community, some 180 states, parties, recognize the historical disadvantages that women have faced over the millennia, over centuries and centuries, and that there ought to be a way to address that, a mechanism, a human rights mechanism to address the discrimination and the lack of equality of women since Adam and Eve, let me just put it that way, to focus attention, right?
Right. And while, so another thing, they say of the 194 UN members, and I think that was a 2021 stat
Yes.
187 countries have ratified CEDAW.
More than that, 190 right. now.
190?
Up to this point, yes.
All right, mm-hmm. but that number does not include the United States of America.
That's correct. So it doesn't include six states parties. So the United States is one of them. Then there are three other countries, Iran, Somalia, and Sudan. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then there are two South Pacific countries, Tonga and Palau. All okay. right. And then there's the Holy Vatican and the Holy See, which one understands would not ratify CEDAW. All right, yeah. The Holy See, the Vatican.
Yeah, yeah.
So there are 6-7 countries that have not ratified it, correct. The United States signed it, but has to date not ratified it, all right? And by signing it, the United States would have entered into the spirit of the convention, mm-hmm. okay? In fact, it was one of the first states to sign it, but it has not proceeded to ratify it. Now, the United States has gone through a lot of iterations of trying to sign it. Even mm-hmm. today, Biden is talking about signing it because in the 70s and 80s, he was one who proposed that it be signed, but it has not been ratified as yet.
So is that like I owe you money, so I write a check, right? Like yeah. I sign it, but right. I don't actually right. sign. Mm-hmm. I don't actually yeah. put mm-hmm. my name on it, so I don't ratify it. But right. I give you the check, it's just yes. not signed.
Signed, right, right.
Like a pledge.
Yeah, what yep. a tough position yeah. to be in. Okay. So we're sort of running out of time, right? Mm-hmm. But what is the role of the, well, what do you as a commissioner do briefly?
Yes.
And then why are you focused on the marital rape discussion?
So we're going to zero in, okay.
Yeah.
So I was elected in 2016 by 190 states parties to be on the committee. So this committee is the mechanism that monitors compliance with the convention. So okay. every human rights treaty has a committee mm-hmm. that sits in Geneva, and every three times a year we go to Geneva and we monitor states. States parties come before us and we interrogate them, we have a conversation with them to see where they are with this issue of advancing the human rights of women. And we enforce compliance with the convention, the articles of the convention. So that is what we do.
All right.
Yes.
Absolutely. And so there's a Tribune article earlier this month, and it reads, quote, Attorney General Ryan Pinder says his ministry has compiled a, quote, suite of legislation, close quotes, to meet the country's international human rights obligations, which includes laws addressing gender-based violence and marital rape. Is CEDAW and that one of the external obligations he's talking about?
Absolutely. CEDAW is one of them. The Bahamas ratified CEDAW in 1993, and it has obligations under CEDAW to protect and the rights of women and to advance the rights of women. So it's one of the state parties' obligations, and this is an international mandate
right.
that seeks to legitimize a basis of equality between women and men and non-discrimination on the basis of sex.
Is there a time scale for this? Or
So in terms of actually implementing yeah. the...
Or can it just be forever? They can
well,
fiddle around with it.
It's open-ended. But the way the mechanism works is that states parties report to us every 4 years. That is part of the convention. So every 4 years, the Bahamas has to present a report on the status of women in this country, on yeah. health issues, on employment issues, on gender-based violence issues, on issues concerning the family, the Constitution that prohibits, that enforces, I should say, or anchors discrimination on the basis of sex. Our own Constitution does that. So the Bahamas has to report to CEDAW every 4 years on advancements and compliance with the convention, and I hope that responds to your question.
Yeah, and have we mm-hmm. made any movements in compliance
right,
with
so,
the convention?
Right. So we appeared before CEDAW in 2012, and then again in 2018. And Aaron was one of the NGO participants who was there in Geneva, watching and witnessing and also advocating on behalf of women here in the Bahamas in terms of CEDAW. So coming out of the 2018 meeting, CEDAW would have presented the Bahamas with what's called recommendations or concluding observations. The Bahamas then takes this with them home and is supposed to look at all the recommendations and work with them and strategize and create programs and or policies and legislation to comply. So has the Bahamas done, have we taken on board those recommendations? Well, since 2018, there's been lots of talk. Mm-hmm. And one of them is the issue of marital rape, mm-hmm. which is where we want to head right now. So under those recommendations, CEDAW was very clear, and it's been so for a couple of times now, that the Bahamas must criminalize marital rape. The criminalization of marital rape is part of the human rights standard international norms, and the Bahamas should comply with that. So over the years, the Bahamas has made noise about it, all right? But nothing has happened to date, to answer your question, Mark.
A lot of snacks have been served, and I need you to know that refreshments are a major and one of the most important parts of policy
food
creation, Mark. So a lot of work has been, I mean, a lot of money has been, wait, a lot of talk has, a lot of talk has occurred, and refreshments.
Mm-hmm.
And to some extent, I wonder if the government feels that that's a sufficient position, right? That surely CEDAW cannot be asking us to direct the minds and the hearts of our citizens to a foregone conclusion that we would all be safer and happier if we could guarantee a degree of equality and equitable access to things, right? Because we all tingsy. But that's not really what it seems is happening. So let's transition right there. CEDAW is driving this. CEDAW, the Convention on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women and Girls, is driving for states to criminalize marital rape. But criminalizing marital rape is not only about protecting women. It's also about protecting men.
Mm-hmm.
It's a gender-neutral law. And I imagine that this is a part of the progression of the law. And so I was telling people I participated in the Equality Bahamas marital rape discussion that you presented at. Mm-hmm. And there was this fantastic discussion where you took us through the progression of the law from what I presume is its inception, right?
Mm-hmm.
All the way back in 1736, right? I want to read this quote. I got to bring you back for this discussion, but like I say, people, the law that is being proposed today is gender neutral and recognizes that husbands, right, that men can also be victims of marital rape perpetrated by their spouse, right? In 1736, though, is this the beginning of the beginning of the jurisprudence,
yes,
the beginning of the law around marital rape?
Mm-hmm.
In 1736, this man, I want to call him a boy, but I don't know him personally, so I can be a little respectful. This man said, named Matthew Hale said, quote, "The very being or existence of the wife is suspended in marriage." First of all, Marion, what were they into in the 17th? Why? How could they accuse women of witchcraftery and obeism, but judges are suggesting that a woman could just get married and disappear?
Yeah, that's an interesting one, because it was a property.
Yes.
Women were originally property, and it was a rape against property. Therefore, the victim could, there was no redress by the victim. But if they were witchcraft, then obviously another principle applied, right?
Was targeted at
that
women.
That was them, right? Not their owner or their husband or their father.
Exactly.
Ooh, that's interesting.
But this is how people thought.
Yeah, exactly. This is exactly what Mark is saying, is that, you know, women were property, considered property. Women and children were considered property back in the 1700s, property of the husband or the father, and or the father. And that the offense of rape really was instituted to protect a man's property, meaning his wife.
Right.
So it was not against the woman, it was against the man.
Chattel.
Right. So the inception of the law, the inception of the law around rape generally has nothing to do with the woman's body or her bodily autonomy. It's about protecting the man's property. Like how that magistrate told the guy, "Look here, you groped that woman, but you're going to need a custodial sentence because of the impact of your actions on tourism."
Yeah, that's...
Whoa.
Yeah.
Look how long it's been, and the law ain't changed much at all.
The thinking, exactly.
Right, the thinking.
It's really the thinking.
That's because
the offense of rape is very clear now, but it's the thinking that needs to be changed. And that is why I always say, when I talk about these issues, is that legislation is one thing, and it's a very important component of combating the inequality. Mm-hmm. But what is most important is the public education awareness raising around the cultural norms and concepts and understandings and beliefs that we have about these issues. That is what needs to be transformed. And
what you're talking about is the rape myths.
Absolutely.
That article I read by Lisa Benjamin back in 2009, she talked about the rape myths that were being continuously promulgated in the media.
Exactly.
Such as the vindictive woman who is falsely
accusing a man of rape.
Exactly, and there were two or three other things. The sanctity of the marriage bed was another rape myth, and also that if an acquaintance or somebody you know rapes you, it's not really rape.
Yeah.
So those were how do we deal with that? Because I think they're still prevalent to some extent.
So that's really going to require something more than legislation.
Absolutely. You know? Mm-hmm. So Marion, I didn't want to tell the audiences right now, but if you are available tomorrow to continue this conversation, I have a guest that you know, and it was having a similar conversation, though slightly different, because, I mean, Womanish Ways is just such an important documentary and moment in time, and captures such an important moment in time, and it's necessary to understand, to inform the discussion. We had to talk about it. But come back on if you can tomorrow. I'm going to have a representative from Equality Bahamas talking about their Strike 5 campaign, which is a complimentary.
Alicia.
Yeah, Alicia Wallace, complimentary to this discussion. Let me read some text dead quick. Why don't we women crowdfund that research on those suffragette women, along with Candy's Women's Shelter and a Court for Domestic Issues and Violence. Finally, let's crowdfund so conflict resolution can be taught in schools with special attention on our boys, but from really young. Yeah, I was going to tell y'all, you know, those pearls, we could sell them and make plenty, plenty money, ladies. Plenty, plenty money. Text, I sent a text to three of your talk show hosts, including you, concerning COVID protocols since the Royals. Am I not blind? No, man, listen. Yeah, we're going to talk about that. That's a deeper political discussion. Another text, Guardian Radio, give Ms. Green 2 hours. It's me. It's the problem. With mass ignorance, mass psychosis, compounded by the imbecilic mass media spreading disinformation, there is no such thing as human rights as displayed during the pandemic. The Catholic is not the Holy Catholic Church. Why only them holy? Boy, that's another whole show in a text. Texter, and last text, here's a question. In terms of women's rights and movement, how is it being allowed that natural-born women are losing in college and professional sports to grown men who change their identification? It's just because you don't know how to spell the word trans woman. Text, I could be honest. And when you see it written out, then it'll make sense. That's another conversation. I don't want to cut you short like that, Texter, but I'm all out of time. My producer's playing the music. Thank you, Marion.
Thank you, Aaron.
I beg you to come back. Thank you, Mark.
Awesome.
Yeah, I beg you to come back. Have a great day, Bahamas. Guardian Radio AM is up next. Stay tuned.